warrior's mindset is about conditioning the mind, body, and spirit. It takes practice, commitment, vision, goal setting, determination, sharp focus, respect, and discipline. Once you learn it, you can apply it to all aspects of your life. The warrior's mindset prepares you for the largest competition ever, the competition against self.
All right, everybody, welcome to William Bam Johnson's Warrior's Mindset, where it's all about overcoming your obstacles and using the principles and values of the martial arts. Our ultimate goal is to bring together the mind, body, and spirit so we can overcome all different challenges that we face today. Especially during these times, we need motivational, inspirational people to come into our lives, speak to us, and allow us to be able to step our game up and do our very best. Today, we have someone that's really dear to me, a person that set example for me so much without even knowing it. But in the days of Karate Illustrated, that little kid in the project stealing the magazine, posting their pictures up on the wall, her name is the legendary, no other than Miss Arlene Lemus. Good morning, ma'am.
Good morning, Bam. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. Wonderful. I mean, dreams do come true, man. Every time I get a chance to be in your presence, I just think about how hard I used to strive to want to be on that stage and be side by side with people like you, and you know, just have your respect and your support like this in the world. I'm just really grateful. So thank you.
You're welcome, and it's great to be here. I always like connecting with you.
Yes, ma'am. And you're always smiling. That's what keeps people going, man. And in during these times, I think that's what everybody needs to see, regardless of what's going on. They need to see a smile.
Yeah, it helps. I mean, we've had, you know, conversations before. Things are going to get us. Things are going to punch us in the gut. We have a choice at that point, right? Are we going to sit there doom and gloom? Or are we going to look for some other options? And then like, okay, all right. You know, my dad, I think I got it from my dad, because he would come in and he would say to my mom, "All right, Slim, I got good news and I got bad news." And my mom is, you know, she hits the negative side right away. So my mom would go, "Oh, what's wrong, Grandma?" You know, and then my dad would say, "Well, you know, the car broke down. Well, what's the good news? We got the money to fix it." Yeah. I mean, you know, yeah. I mean, right. So I think I got that approach from my dad.
And it's awesome because that ties into the radio show. That makes me think about the name Warrior's Mindset, you know, and I mean, you just, because that concept is so universal and we can put any name on it. If you would describe personally what the Warrior's Mindset means to you, how would you describe the Warrior's Mindset?
Wow. I mean, that means so much to me, the Warrior's Mindset, because I think a warrior has to be compassionate, has to be forgiving, has to be strong, has to be resilient. So it's more than just, you know, strong in the battle. It's encompasses so much more to me than just that. But yeah, I mean, it's a list of tools in your toolbox to be a warrior, and it's resiliency and compassion and forgiveness and motivation and indomitable spirit. It's all those things, in my opinion, and knowing when you need those tools, which is the stuff we all work on, right? When do we use those tools? When do we need them?
So that seemed to be something that you've been a part of your life since you enter then. I mean, I think you mentioned it before, starting off in the martial arts at a young age. How did you think that, well, one, of course, what you just said with your dad and how your family was all about that spirit as well, but how did that manifest in your beginning in the days of starting in martial arts, and what made you get started in the martial arts?
Well, first of all, I was just extremely, extremely fortunate that my parents didn't set any limitations for me.
Okay.
I think they were well aware that they had limitations set on them, or they, through experiences, put limitations on themselves, and they didn't want to put that on me. So both my parents were wide open when it came to me. My dad had some drawback on what females should do and what men should do and women should do. He was pretty old fashioned in that sense, but he quickly had to pivot because I didn't have any part of it. But that's first and foremost, that my parents were just so, I don't even know, man, just so open-minded when it came to me. I'm the baby, so maybe they learned their, you know, they learned as they went along. So that's first. I started the martial arts because my brothers were in it. My oldest brother, Arnold, was in it. And he had tried to encourage my other brothers to do it. And a couple of them had dropped out. They didn't like it. And then Grandmaster Tai said, well, you know, okay. You know, my dad was like, well, can we have these classes we paid for? Can we let Arlene go? And Master Tai was like, yeah, okay. Not thinking that I'd last. I mean, I was five. There were no kids programs. There were only adult men in the classes and me. I was like their mascot, I think. I think they just kind of kept me around, you know. But it worked. It worked. And I fell in love with it. And, you know, even there's another situation where Grandmaster Tai didn't put any limitations on me. He just let me try to keep up. That's kind of what everybody has done, is just, okay, yeah, sure, let Arlene try it. And it worked, you know. So, yeah, that's how I got started.
So, I mean, based upon that sort of ability, when we talk about the instructor just allowing you to go, just come in. I think about when I went to China, they couldn't speak Chinese. I mean, they couldn't speak English. They only could speak Chinese. So I had to learn by doing. It was less talk, more action. And I think today in the world of martial arts, you spend so much time analyzing, talking, and discussing about theories and concepts that we lack so much participation. Like back in the day, your conversation was based upon what you did, not the conversation before, and then talk, and then go out there and do it. How important is that action equals, you know, your experience and your wisdom? Because you got to learn hands-on. How important is that?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes we can't talk about if a sparring technique's going to work. At some point, we got to try it in the ring, you know? I have incredible respect for Grandmaster Ri. Incredible respect for Grandmaster Ri. But we were at a Jun Ri function, and he had just this great picture that martial arts was going to create world peace. Okay. And he was being very philosophical about, you know, the proper lines of a punch and our posture and the beauty of that punch. And there was another junior instructor there from Florida, Angel, and he's sitting there listening attentively to Grandmaster Ri. And then all of a sudden, when Grandmaster Ri stopped talking, he was like, oh yeah, I just punch him. We were all like, so, I mean, and that's kind of the two worlds, right? We got to try to be somewhere in the middle. I mean, I think if we lose the philosophy of martial arts, we're doomed. So we need that philosophy of martial arts, but we need action of martial arts as well. We need that middle ground.
But it seems like, you know, and I wasn't there. I came in at the very end of the days of Karate Illustrated, the greatest time in sports karate, I can say. That was the thrills of looking in the magazine and seeing the action of you guys. And I think even at that time, to have a magazine to oversee the sport like karate, like Sports Illustrated, you know, what was it? Because at that time, it was more action. I mean, you know, in relationships. I mean, what was that time like for you? That the greatest era of sports. Would you agree that was the greatest era of sport karate?
You know, I try not to be that old person who looks back and says that my time was the best time. So all I can say is it looked pretty darn good when I was in it. And from looking backward, it still looks pretty good. So, but I mean, I was thinking the other day, I was sharing a conversation with Ray McCallum online, and I was thinking about those times. You know, sometimes I'd have to go to three different newsstands to find the current copy of Karate Illustrated and Black Belt magazine, because they were selling out.
Yeah,
You know, I mean, I don't know if they have that type of distribution now, but they were in every, you know, Walgreens or farm, you know, those kind of corner stores that you get your prescriptions from, Woolworths and Walgreens. And you'd have to look and they would be up front. They wouldn't be way in the back hidden somewhere. Those martial arts magazines used to be up front and we would wait for that Karate Illustrated to come out to see what the rankings were, who was going to be on the cover, you know, what tournaments they were going to cover. Yeah, that was a good time, man. And for all practical purposes, we had a competitors union at that time, you know, because of Renardo Barden and his vision for what he thought the sport should be and what he thought the athletes should get, who were generating so many funds, so much money for the tournament promoters.
You know, on the outside, now I can say it for you as a fan, you guys saved my life, and you know that story. You guys saved my life, you know. That little kid would pick up that magazine and would tear you out, you know, being rated in forms, being rated in web. You know, you were a complete martial artist. People, I think some people forget that. You know, the what do they call you? The Lady Kung Fu. You know, see that?
Yeah.
I remember my history, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
So those things, for me as a fan, I remember getting off the bus, coming to those tournaments. It was like being in a rain of stars. But it inspired us so much, you know? So I can say it was the greatest era of martial arts that inspired me since I've been on this planet. And I just want to say that, you know, to you and on this show, I thank you. And I will say it over and over.
Well, I mean, I appreciate you saying that. But you know, when you're in it, you're just loving what you're doing. You're genuine in your action. So it doesn't seem like you're doing anything special. But man, it sure was a lot of fun. And it sure, you know, it sure, martial arts in general, but competitive martial arts have saved me so many times. You know, it's given me a safe haven so many times.
Well, you know, and I think when you hit the one thing, being in it, when we think of art being authentic, you know, when you're authentically connected, to me, I think a real artist is understand that the only way you can change the world is to have that heavenly moment. I think when you can be, I know for me, when I was in that 3 minute, I would go to a tournament just for 3 minutes. I don't care what was going on, for 3 minutes to do that form on that stage, I was in heaven. I was like walking on air. And when I came off that stage, it was like, all right, this guy, I'm good, man. I'm good. I don't care what's going on.
Yeah.
I mean, what that zone, I guess that's what we can call it. What is that like for you as a competitor, or have been like you for you at those moments?
I mean, look, I don't really share a lot of my, you know, my growing up with people, but, you know, we were pretty poor. You know, we lived in a very, very bad, unsafe neighborhood in Chicago. And going to martial arts schools and getting to go to tournaments and just, man, I'm going to San Jose today to compete. I'm going to get on a plane and go to San Jose and compete in a tournament. I'm leaving the hood, man. And then I'd come back to the hood and the kids and my peers in the hood would be like, did you win? Did you win? Let me see your trophy. Let me see. You know, it just was awesome, man. It was, I don't know what happens to me. I have friends that were in that same spot with me and they're not where I am today. So I don't know what happens to me if I don't have that outlet, if I don't have that access to the world, because for all practical purposes, me leaving Chicago and going to San Jose, that was like going across the world at that time, you know? So seeing people that look different, seeing people that dress different, you know, it was awesome. You know, it meant a lot. I mean, I don't know how to explain it. It just, I just don't know where I'm at without those opportunities.
But once again, martial arts, that's the power of martial arts, that spiritual.
Yes.
I mean, and I'm not speaking religion, but I came up realizing you cannot have martial arts with mind, body, and spirit. Is that chi, that spiritual connection, like what we have. I mean, it's like, you know, or when you would go to the tournament, I mean, y'all guys, you would be competing with these people, but y'all would be so friendly and so supportive. Yeah. before the tournament. And then when it was time to fight, y'all be in there trying to knock each other head off.
Banging, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I think sports in general, once you get to a point where you've reached some amount of excellence, I think you can look at other people and just, even if it's your competition, and appreciate they put in the work, they showed up, they landed it on the day they needed, at the time they needed to land it. And that's awesome.
Yeah.
Even if that beat me, that's awesome.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, and that's what I enjoyed so much about Raymond McCallum, because he could kick your butt and be as tenacious as you could possibly imagine. But if John Longstreet caught him with a reverse kick in the face, he was like, oh man, that was good.
Yeah.
That was good. That was awesome. You know? And a lot of people were like that.
Yeah. And I think that's what, to me, what I see as a teacher, and I see as, you know, even as a community leader, when we deal with sports, sometimes because of the commercialism of the sport, we done lost that balance where you gotta have a moment where they gotta really be challenged emotionally and to a max that's safer now. It don't have to be as abusive or extreme like it was back then, because we have more education. How is it important for them to go to that point? Everybody can't win. Defeat helps you become a winner.
Right.
I mean, would you agree?
Yeah. I mean, I know it sounds cliche, but you learn far more from your losses than you do your wins. I think when you lose your wins, you're just soaked up in the euphoria of your win.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not forced to look at, hey, what the heck happened? You don't analyze your wins. Why did I win that? No, you don't question it. You just go, man, I won. That was awesome. But when you lose, you're forced to analyze what the heck happened. And I think you need those periods of, analyzation. You know, I tell kids all the time, I think people think, man, the way Arlene's life looks is she must have been just successful all along.
Right.
And that's not the case, you know, when it comes to competition. I went one full year, you know, I get it from looking backward. I understand it now. But at the time, it just felt horrible. I went one full year and I competed probably 40 times that year. And at each of those 40 times, I had an opportunity to win in forms, fighting, and in weapons forms. So that's 120 chances I had to win. And I won 1/3 place trophy. At the same time, my brother was competing and he went undefeated for the year in forms, fighting, and weapons. So not only did I have a horrible competitive year, but an unsuccessful year. I won't say it was horrible because it probably shaped me, but unsuccessful year. But I had to get in that car after the tournament with my brother putting his 3 first place trophies in that car every tournament. So it shaped me. At the end of that season, I had a crossroads because, you know, I was an athletic kid. I could play other sports. I was good at basketball. I was good at softball. I was good at other things. And I had that crossroads. What are you going to do? And I still chose to do martial arts. And then everything just blew up. I beat Linda the next year. It was just boom, you know, won the Diamond Nationals in the adult division. So, but.
I identify with that because I think back just once again, and I say again, because we don't understand the power. I think the highest level of excellence is art. Art emulates life. And art can change the world. Sometimes we don't realize how sports, you know, music, movies, clothing, fashion, these all things speak to people subliminal. And I believe when we get to a stage in our life, we realize that I can affect more people through my artistic expression. And that's what you guys, that's what the magazine did. And that's what you guys did for me. And even, I mean, for me getting on a bus for 4 days, for 4 days to make it to a tournament and to get off that bus and come in the tournament and see you guys and just to be a part of that, knowing how bad the life was that I had to go back to and to win eighth place at the Diamond Nats. That's when they had them little blue ribbons. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's like to win the eighth place back then, and you looked at all the competition that you was competing against, that was like first place.
Yeah, yeah, it was a big deal. I mean, it was a tough crowd. I mean, the competitive excellence was incredible back then. Yeah, man. And you should have been proud of that eighth place. I know you moved up a lot further than eighth place, but at that one, yeah, you should have been proud on that one.
And I was. And I think the beautiful thing was just once again, the fellowship. I mean, when I say how much you mean to me, and I'll say that over and over, but it's like I call Master Billy Blanks my spiritual advisor, because I can call him and he picks up the phone and he's like, what's going on, Bam? And he just talks to me. We just think we keep it focused on a higher purpose, but always say I'm glad that I was the water boy. I'm glad I was the water boy. At that time when Master Blanks was, like all of you guys were stars, when I was amongst you, I shut up. I listened. You know what I'm saying? I was humble. And I waited for my time.
Yeah.
And I didn't fight for the time. It just came. And you know, I think I say that to any kid out there. Don't force it. You know, I think sometimes we look around and we want something so bad. We lack humility. We don't know how to set back. In martial arts, the one thing I know in our handbook, we always say, who carries the bags? The underbelt. Who opens the door? The underbelt. Who washes the bags? The underbelt. And until we get back to those sort of protocols in life, we will always have these different conflicts. And sometimes people will never be able to really manifest into, I believe, what they can, because they want to jump from here to there. How important is it to follow that level of respect and giving respect back to the pioneers, not just in martial arts, but in life in general, your parents, your community leaders, et cetera?
Yeah, I mean, it's very important. I think it says a lot about who you are, you know? I was a martial arts school gym rat, you know? I was there waiting at the door before, you know, Sifu came and opened up, and I was the last one. He was the last one waiting with me when my mom and dad would come to pick me up at night, you know, like literally. So my day was get in, you know, clean up the school, make sure the trash was taken out, make sure all the equipment was put back in order, if the floors needed to be mopped. I mean, that's what I did as soon as I got into the school. You know, I had I was very fortunate to have Sifu Mike Leconte as my major mentor at that time. And, you know, then I'd get a bonus workout, you know, I'd get some type of afternoon little nugget of knowledge, you know, because I was there, just he and I. And then take every class, white sash class, blue sash class, didn't matter, whatever I could get into, I would do it. And then at the end of the night, pack stuff up, whatever, maybe Sifu Mike would buy me something to eat or a soda or something. And then my dad would come pick me up and then I'd roll. You know, it was, I don't see those. I mean, I have had students like that, and those are the ones that get the big picture and really feel that martial arts changed their life. Mm-hmm. The students that come in and have that type of attitude, that whatever you need, Miss Lima, what you want me to mop the floor? Don't grab that. I got that, Miss Lima. You know, those kids are the ones, not saying that other students don't grasp what martial arts means as well. They do, but it's just a little different type of appreciation, you know, that those students that are taking that approach to their involvement in the school, the real sense of community. Again, I didn't know that's what it was when I was in it. Yeah. I was just happy to be there, but it really created a sense of community for me.
Yeah. And when you talk about your students, I know you got a lot of them, but I don't think many people know that Arnold Chong's your student.
Yeah. 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 Arnie's a great story. Arnie's a great story. Giovanni Corvera,
yes, yes.
Kofi, a lot of those guys that are tearing it up in LA and doing stunt work and movie work. I'm just so proud of them. But Arnie was and is an incredible story, and he just has a special place here. He's just such a unique character. He's a good man.
But a lot of times, I think when you look at champions, great champions, some people don't have the ability to convert that over to being selfless. Because in order to be a good teacher, you got to be a selfless giver. They say you have to give it away in order to keep it. What do you think was a turning point for you to make it to that point to surrender to becoming such a great teacher, mentor, coach, or leader?
You know, I kind of fell into teaching by accident. Some circumstances occurred here, and Grandmaster Tai ended up closing most of his schools. So I literally went to school to the studio one day, had a great workout, went back the next day, closed up. So my dad and my brother put some mats in our garage and hung a bag. And, you know, I just started training in my garage and it got too hot. So I would lift up the door a little bit to get a little circulation. And next thing I know, some kids in the neighborhood are looking under the door. What's going on in there? You know, now I got 5 or 6 kids in there training with me. So that's how I started teaching. And it hit me very quickly that by me telling someone how to correct their martial arts made me think about what I was doing with my kick. So if I was telling you, you know, you need to pull your knee back and, you know, make sure you're recoiling, it made me immediately look like, okay, am I doing that? I know how it's supposed to be done because I'm telling you, but am I kicking like that? So it really became quite introspective for me and really kept me really polished. So that's how initially, you know, I felt, although I was sharing my knowledge at that young age, it really was pretty selfish of me because I felt I was getting so much out of it. And then the better they got, the better sparring partners I got.
Those are the good old days, right?
Yeah. So if I could lift my students up, that was just, they were just more training partners for me. And, right. You know, so it was a little selfish at that time, to tell you the truth. But it really did show me that you learn so much by teaching. So I was very grateful for that. And then after that, I think a good teacher who has benefited in what we teach, martial arts, I think they just want everybody to feel what we feel. I just want people to feel what I feel, man. You know, I tell the kids all the time when we start our black belt cycle, which is like a 10-week training blitz before black belt test. I know how good it feels to tie on a black belt or a black sash. It's like a freaking superpower. It feels awesome. And I want that for you, you know, that's why I do it. That's what motivates me. I want them to feel all the gifts that martial arts has given me.
And the beautiful thing when you talk about your garage, that's like history repeating itself. Look at COVID. That's what people have to do now. So it's funny how you look at when we really look at things, that's why history is so important. There's nothing new. Bruce Lee says, you know, there's nothing new. If you really compare what we got to do to make adjustments and teach and train, it's like it used to be when martial arts first got in the park. You know
in
what I mean?
Basements, in parks, and in garage. Yep, exactly.
So, I mean, if you could say anything, because I want to ask that, I got one other special question I want to ask you, but if you could say anything to anyone right now that, probably even a school owner, they might say, well, man, I can't teach. I got to close my school down. I mean, I can't have this. I can't handle this Zoom. I mean, this thing ain't working. How important is it to go back to the basic core of martial arts can be practiced anywhere? It doesn't matter.
Of course. I mean, it's not just my approach to answering your question right now about, you know, what do I say to that person? It's my approach to everything. I mean, you have to exhaust all your options before you give up. That's just how I feel.
Yes.
You have to exhaust all your options. And maybe that just comes from a sporting life, a martial arts competitive life where you don't give up. Yeah. You've got to exhaust your options. And also you have to be introspective. If this isn't working, what's going on? You know, why isn't it working? And, you know, I remember when we first started the Zoom classes, I was like, man, I can't get these guys to figure out I'm going with my right hand. They're just seeing me and they're going with their left hand. And, you know, So I just started, okay, what's going on? Then I started talking, sending messages to people. Hey, how are you handling this? Oh, we put the camera in the mirror.
Yeah.
Like, oh, wow. Okay. You know, I mean, you gotta get all your resources and just, okay, what can I do before you throw in the towel? You can't. Yeah. I mean, as a coach, I gave my athlete every opportunity before I would, you know what? We're going to call it a day,
yeah.
You know? So, and as a player, as a competitor, please don't ever count me out. Cause I'm going to be in there till the end. Sometimes maybe that's not the attribute we need, but I'm going to do that no matter what. I'm going to go till the end. I'm going to exhaust all my options.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And that brings me to the next question. When the Olympics came about and everybody was doing sports karate, and I mean, on the outside, I guess everybody was, from what I understand as a, you know, just a third party or fourth party person that got the information, was like all these competitors, like, man, they're going to have Taekwondo in the Olympics. And everybody was talking about who was going to do it. What made you, what made you even come up with the idea to go into the Olympics, and what happened for that opportunity to even come about?
Well, there were some local Taekwondo people here who in Chicago who fought some open circuit and fought the WT World Taekwondo Organization's circuit, which was the Olympic style.
Okay.
You know, and we were just, you know, hanging out at local tournaments, you know, and they said, man, Arlene, you know, Taekwondo is going to be in the Olympics, and your style, the way you fight, you can win in that. And I was like, you know, because there was no, in my opinion, sport karate at that time was just so high level. The local Taekwondo tournaments just didn't seem like a competitive arena. And they said, no, this is full contact. This isn't ITF style. This is full contact. And I was like, And I was at a point where I wanted to be challenged. I wanted to try different things. I remember it was right around the time I had just gone to Baton Rouge and fought in this Kung Fu tournament where it was like Bruce Lee style, where you lock arms in a round ring. I mean, I was trying to get into kickboxing. I was looking for other things that were going to challenge me.
Right.
And so I said, okay, I'll go try this local tournament. It was like a regional Olympic style championship. And the first thing I noticed is that my front leg wasn't as powerful as I thought. So I was like, man, you know, in my mind, I was thinking, I'm holding back because it's light contact. But if I really wanted to hit somebody, I could do some damage. That's what I was thinking in my mind. But now I was trying to hit somebody and it wasn't doing much damage. Okay. So I wasn't used to that higher level of contact. And then my chest, I thought it was in great shape, but now this 3-minute round and three 3-minute rounds, my chest is burning. I'm winning this fight, but I'm not happy how I'm winning it. You know, soon as I finished up that tournament, I won that tournament, but I was like, okay, I could do this. I could get inspired to be better at this. And so I just started competing in more of those tournaments. I didn't think at that time, like, man, I'm going to go in here and dominate. That's not what I thought. I'm just going to try it, see what I can do. And I just was fortunate that I was able to transition to a little more power, generating a little more power off my front leg, adding to my toolbox, back leg round kicks, back kicks, jump back kicks, things that we weren't using in point. Probably the little unsung hero is my ability to punch. Although I wasn't punching people in the face, I had really good, you know, strong punches. And it would take a lot of the Taekwondo fighter spirit. Because even if I wasn't scoring, bam, I just hit through that chest guard. I didn't care that I didn't get a point, that there was no point for it. Right. Just the look in their eyes like, oh, shoot. You know? So that transition, there was a lot that I took from point and build on, of course. And I think I was just so different. My movement in the ring, my style in the ring, my tempo, you know, point fighting footwork is incredible, you know? So yeah, it was, that's how the transition happened. And then it was just like everybody else, win your state, win at nationals, go to team trials. You know, I mean, there was opposition, as most people in the point circuit know, there was opposition to me transitioning to Olympic style. They didn't want a point fighter coming in there and being successful. They wanted their people to be successful, rightfully so. I think they were afraid that there'd be a floodgate opened and all these point fighters would come over and take over their sport. That didn't happen because it wasn't as easy as everybody thought to make the transition. It was in that process, there was a lot of opposition. So, I mean, there were court cases and attorneys and fighting for the right to get the opportunity to fight Olympic style. But it made it all that much sweeter when it did come, all the pieces of the puzzle fit.
And you were one of the first people to win the gold medal, if not the first, right?
I was the first American to win a gold medal in the sport of Taekwondo.
What was that one moment like, standing there representing your country?
You know, it was incredible. I mean, you can't even describe it. And it gets in my mind, it gets more meaningful every year for me. You know, for me personally, it gets more meaningful. But there is a little bit of arrogance that we have when we're young and we're successful, right? That this is just going to keep going forever, right? This is just another win. I got another win in me, you know? So there is that type of feeling. But, you know, on that stage, it's just when you're hearing your anthem, and, you know, I got to hear it twice because we sang it and we heard it. Right. It was pretty incredible. The Olympic Games in general, the symbolism of the Olympic Games, it's so in tune with who I am, mm-hmm. you know, and what I believe about life. It seems very corny, but, you know, the Olympic flame, that's that flame that burns in all of us, right?
Right.
And that Olympic flame is lit somewhere all the time. It never goes out. Like, it's guarded, you know, and they have, you know, the backup flame in case that one goes out. The Olympic flame never goes out. That symbolism, things like that about the Olympic movement are just right on spot to like how I think. So,
well, one of the things that I just want to say as we close, I want to say thank you for all the things you have done in my life and continue to do. And even when you were at our last super fighter, you had hooked me up with Duke Rufus about them trying to make a form of MMA working towards
point
sport.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And they ended up approving point MMA as a level of competition in their international competition. And the next person I have on when I finish talking to you is one of the guys that's the leader of the organization. But that, once again, I mean, that's what we did, what we wanted to do with Point MMA. We just wanted to expand the sport. Like you said, point fighters, I mean, it's a great evolution. You can make a transition to anything if you come upright and if it's taught right. And I looked at, you know, in the past, I think when commercial martial arts schools became more important for a contract rather than the development of the black belt, that's when me and my wife said, nah, we ain't going to take out fighting. If you take out fighting in the martial arts, it's done. You know, it's like you get black belts without fight. That. And that's how Point MMA came about. But now to really be able to see those pieces come together in one for what you have done, just through a basic conversation, I just want to say thank you, because every kid can have an opportunity, I believe. Everybody don't have to do tackle football. They can play flag football.
Right.
That's how I look at what Point MMA. Every kid can get the experience to be able to do tag. They don't have to go into a cage and be beat up, because some people just want the experience. They don't want all the other stuff. If you wanted to add anything to what I just said, how would you close that out?
I mean, I think there's something really, really valuable about sparring. And that's my biggest concern with this kind of pandemic, kind of Zoom class thing, is that we're really missing out on that aspect of martial arts. Again, like you said, it doesn't need to be this crazy, you know, kill the person for their black belt test. They fight 15 people and, you know, they can barely walk the next day. And which is the way we came up, the way I came up. You know, we don't need that. But for them to value the achievement of black belt, they need to know that they can defend themselves at some level. They need to. I mean, or else they're always going to question themselves when they're walking through that parking lot and they hear something behind them. They're not going to be able to draw the skills that they've worked on. So there has to be something that pushes them past their comfort zone. And they stood up to the situation and bam, because that's what they need to grow on. It's not about winning the fight or winning the tournament at the black belt exam or, you know, it's about just getting past that comfort zone a little bit and then going, yeah, I did that. That's what's important. And that's what we get from tournaments. That's the hidden value of tournaments.
Well, thank you, ma'am. Make sure you have a great day. Continue and be safe. You say you're traveling next week, so be safe.
And yeah, so we have thank you. Thank you, sir. Thank you. Best of luck to you. Keep doing what you're doing. Hugs to your better half, okay?
Yes, ma'am. She's going to be mad because every time I get a chance to speak to you when she's not present, she's like, oh, man, I'm going to knock you out. It's like, so you know how much you mean to her. You're a hero. So be safe on your trip, okay?
Thank you, sir. All right. All the best, buddy.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.